Good afternoon. It's 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, the 16th of August. I'm Brian Shields in for Ray Graff today. Today's program is The Writers Forum. Joining me in the studio are novelist Barbara Chapaitis and reviewer Steve Sawicki. They're here to answer your questions about the process of creative writing. Want to start writing but can't seem to find the words, or are you a writer looking to get published? Give us a call, 800-348-2551. The Writers Forum today on Vox Pop. The number to call, 800-348-2551. You can also check in online. We'll tell you all about that right after the news and Vox Pop. Thank you once again for joining us today on Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in program. I'm Brian Shields. Are you interested in starting a writing project, or do you need help getting published? We'll explore those questions and some others today with two seasoned writers. Barbara Chapaitis is an author of 11 published novels, including The Amber and Feeding Christine, each one based on family history. She is also the author of two nonfiction books, Feathers of Hope and Saving Eagle Mitch. She is the founder of the storytelling trio, The Snickering Witches, and teaches writing and public speaking at the College of St. Rose in Albany. Steve Sawicki was assistant writer for two screenplays and published his novella, Invisible Friends, in Absolute Magnitude. He is also a jurist for the Nebula Awards. His writing includes several short stories and columns for the San Francisco Chronicle. The number to call today on Vox Pop for the Writers Forum is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also post comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. You can email us too, voxpop@wamc.org. But the phone number, 800-348-2551. The Writers Forum today is 800-348-2551. Steve and Barbara, thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here.
It is great to be here.
Let's do some catching up. Barbara, what you been up to lately?
I have been working with management, a film management company based in LA, seeing if we can put together some of my script work and start trying to get that out into the world. A lot of that script work I did with Steve, so... Mm-hmm. That's a family affair, you might say. I'm working on a novel. I've got a couple of gigs coming up, storytelling gigs. October 1st, story suppers, Story Sundays, which is a supper and storytelling event at Glenn Sanders, and a gig at Hubbard Hall for Whispering Bones ghost stories.
Is that the Snickering Witches?
I am the witch now. It's the Snickering Witch.
Witch, okay.
But in October, I'll be telling with Mary Murphy, who's also just so great.
And Steve, what have you been up to?
I've been doing a lot of writing. Still a lot of reviewing, which I've done for quite a few years. Just a quick correction. I haven't actually written for the San Francisco Chronicle.
Okay.
That was the Science Fiction Chronicle.
But San Francisco
is,
and science fiction.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're all kind of convinced that San Francisco is science fiction anyway.
From my end, writing short fiction and doing review work, the internet has made things, I would say, much more complicated, and we can talk about that later on, just in terms of there's a lot more opportunity out there, but the money has decreased pretty dramatically, so it's much more difficult to find paying work. I was writing for the past 3 years for Fantastic Stories of the Imagination, which was an internet magazine, and they just went belly up this past spring. So currently I'm doing my own blog and just placing things where I can.
800-348-2551. It's 800-348-2551. What's it like to collaborate? You're working together. Is it, I think it would be tough you want your ideas, this person wants their ideas. How do you
we had this
how do you
one,
compromise?
We had this one nailed perfectly because we each had our own projects that we were working on individually.
Okay.
So when we were working together, it was a whole separate space, and it was always there was no sense of this is all I have, so I must own it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I could very easily go back to my own novels and then work with Steve with a and it's especially with script, it is so great to collaborate because we would sit down and we would actually speak the script out loud. We'd read it through. And so you get to hear the different voices. You get to really work with not just your imaginary friends, but a real human in the room.
Okay.
And we would often I don't know, people think about collaboration. They probably think of two people together working on a single piece. And what Barbara and I would do was we would set up the coming scenes, 3, 4, or 5 scenes in the future, and then we say, okay, I'm going to do this one, you do that one, and we'd alternate.
Sure.
And then, of course, at the end, you'd want to go back and make sure the voice was consistent. But we were pretty good about that, even getting to that point. When I've done other collaborations, they were much more top down. So the person was the leader, and you followed. And if they didn't like what you did,
right.
Too bad. It was tossed out. And if they like what you did, great. But they were, you know, there's definitely one person in charge. So I'm not sure if that's
right. We were there, I think, in service of the story we were telling, rather than in service of our egos.
Right.
That makes all the difference. Bad collaborations are like the worst ever.
800-348-2551. Let's start off with Joe Allen in Warnersville. Joe Allen.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Barbara, I'm delighted to hear that you did both fiction and nonfiction.
Yes.
Because I have a non-question. I've done a self-published book. It was a great experience. Worked locally with the Troy Bookmakers, who turned out a beautiful project. Amazon reviews have all been 5-star, and Kirkus reviews gave me a fabulous one.
Great.
So I'm feeling pretty confident. Now it is find the literary agent time, and I'm working on the proposal. So, 3 quick questions. Number 1, how important are these positive reviews for Amazon and Kirkus? Number 2, I've just completed the audiobook. Does that matter? And number 3, the bugaboo, comparative titles. How do I work with those without making it sound like I think I'm wonderful and these guys are hacks? Because it's not that case.
Okay,
I'll be happy to just shut up and listen.
I have a question for you though, so you can't just shut up.
Yeah.
Okay. And my question is the book you're looking for an agent for is a new book?
Yes.
So it's
yes, just got published.
No. It's different than the one you e-published.
I don't think so.
It is a paperback as well as a Kindle.
So
I have 2 more in that series half written.
So you want an agent for your EPUB to now go to a traditional publisher and sell it to them. Is that what you're looking for?
And then contract for the next 2 books in the series.
Okay.
The trilogy called The Self-Development Project.
I think your best bet might be to go out to say, look, I did this thing with this first book. It's EPUB. It's doing well. If you have good sales, that's what they want. And an audience that you can return to, that you can name. This is my audience. These are the people who love what I'm doing. They want to see more. I have a plan for a second book, and I would like to do that. Traditional publishing, I'm seeking an agent. I would approach it that way. Don't try to sell them the one you already have up. See what I mean?
Okay. All right. So, because I've been part of a book where it was self-published and then taken on by another publisher, which is why I was going in that direction. But you feel that it's better to go than 2 and 3, not 1.
I would tend to go with 2 and 3. Yeah. They may want to pick up 1 as well, and you can say that's an option. But let them know that your primary interest is that you have more books and you'd like to seek a traditional publisher for them.
Okay.
Unless your sales are like, unless you're like, you know, you've hit the top 10 with your nonfiction.
Oh, from your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah, I know. I'm kissing it up for you. Yeah, I would go with the second. And you want to push the fact that you have a built-in audience, that the audience is strong, that you have a plan for the next two, and so on and so forth. You had one more question at the end that I can't remember now.
You asked a question about reviews. Did the reviews matter, make a difference?
Depends on who's doing the reviews.
Yeah, it depends on who's doing the reviews. Reviews on Amazon don't really mean a lot. They're reader reviews, and there are every 3 or 4 months there's a fury about people who have their friends just do a lot of reviews for their books. So you know, the Amazon reviews are kind of looked at as not real. Kirkus, however, certainly carries a lot more weight than Amazon. So any reviews you have from sort of traditional sources, newspapers, or
Goodreads sometimes.
Yeah, Goodreads sometimes. You know, publishers will certainly look at that, and sometimes people are actually discovered through reviews that are done by Kirkus and other places.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much for calling. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. How do you get a book reviewed? I mean, obviously, Amazon is easy to get a review. You just put it on the site. But I mean, why would Kirkus look at a self-published book?
Well, Kirkus now actually has two different systems. And one is where the publisher or agent will submit the book. And the other is where authors can pay to have a review done. They don't get a guarantee of a good review, mm-hmm. but they can give Kirkus quite a bit of money and ask them to review the book.
And what does Kirkus do? What is once they review it, where does it go?
Used to be a book, a sort of a monthly thing that they sent out of reviews. Now it's online primarily.
Right.
Yeah.
800-348-2551, the book writing forum today. 800-348-2551.
WAMC comes from Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, practicing aesthetic plastic surgery, offering platelet-rich plasma treatment and microneedling, working to help people improve their well-being. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. 518-786-1700. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working on land protection projects that safeguard the water quality of Lake George, hiking maps, public events, and more at lglc.org. Ninepin Cider, Albany. Hard cider made from local apples, tasting room featuring New York cider, beer, wine, and spirits, Tuesday through Sunday, now available in Massachusetts, ninepincider.com. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts, family owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries, georgepropane.com. And Rhinebeck Artishops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston. RhinebeckArt.com.
800-348-2551. The Writers Forum today, 800-348-2551. Barbara Chapitis is here, and so is Steve Sawicki. They're here to take your phone calls at 800-348-2551. And Nicole in Nassau, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Barbara. Hi, Steve. I waited way too long, and so I'm an older lady now looking to publish my first novel, and I think it's a brave new world out there. But my question is, do I go the traditional route of submitting to agents, or do I go through BookBaby or Amazon, and are my expectations unrealistic if I think that I could possibly make any money off my novel?
So first of all, you didn't wait too long. Anybody at any age who completes a novel or any piece of fiction or any piece of nonfiction really deserves to be applauded. So congratulations on getting that. That's seriously the hardest part.
Thank you.
I'm going to let Barbara answer the second question because that's really the much harder one.
Yeah, and I think it depends partly on your level of patience, right? If you are going to go through BookBaby or Amazon, create space to do it. You will be in charge of the timing. You will be in charge of the cover. You will be in charge of the interior look. You can farm some of that out, you know, formatting, editing. They have services for all of that, which are not. CreateSpace is much cheaper than BookBaby, by the way.
What is BookBaby again?
BookBaby is like CD Baby. It's an independent publisher for people who want to publish their, you know, do a, right. a self-pub thing. But it's slightly, the major difference.
A consultant for self-publishing?
No, they format it for you. They have a place where they put it out. They give you some promotional help. And it's accessible through them. One of the things BookBaby does is it's has all the EPUB tools. So it's not just Kindle. It's Kindle and whatever all the other ones are. That it can be sold through Barnes & Noble as well as Amazon. So, you know, we've gotten to that level where we're not really talking about writing anymore. We're talking about business. Mm-hmm. Yuck. But anyway, you can do all that and you are in charge of the timing, right? If you decide mm-hmm. to go through an agent looking for a publisher or to go through a small press that you can approach yourself without an agent, you're going to spend a lot of wait time. And my advice would be to send out a bunch of queries to each, to agents and to small presses that don't require you to have an agent, and do a bunch at once. You're going to wait anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months to hear back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The advantage of going that way, of course, is that you have the sort of imprimatur of the larger publishing, and you could get an advance. That is a possibility. How much of an advance really depends on what kind of book, what kind of publisher. It varies wildly, the level of advance you have. Tell me what your book is. Is it fiction?
Yes. It's a
novel.
It's a love story.
A love story. Classify as romance?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then there are a lot of publishers, and some of them big, that will look at your book without you having an agent. Harlequin has like 20,000 zillion gazillion divisions looking for romance. So you want to check out their website and see who's looking for what. And they'll tell you specifically. All these websites will tell you specifically, our editors are looking for this, 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 and that. We want a Western romance where the woman always wears a cowboy hat and paints her toenails pink. You know, they're real specific about it. And they're looking for a lot of material, a lot, and they do pay. Try that. I would try that first if it was me. I'd give myself a time limit, say, I'm going to give this 6 months and go for it and see what happens.
And you should always believe, I mean, you have to believe in your work. You have to believe that it was worth your investing the time and the energy to produce it. Mm-hmm. And so you have to believe that there's value to it. So I would always try to send it to the place that's going to give you the most money.
Mm-hmm.
As Barbara noted, you know, the difficulty is the amount of time you're going to wait. She and I both have personal experiences of knowing editors at publishing houses who said, yes, we want to look at your work. My case, it was a little over 2 years before they got back to me. And I think in Barb's, it was over a year.
It was a year. Yeah.
So, you know, and that's us. That's knowing people inside.
Right.
For a writer who doesn't know editors or publishers, it's going to be longer than that. So that's the downside is the time factor.
Yeah. But the romance market is still, you know, really a good one. They're hungry.
And my just last quick question. What about the royalties? I couldn't really understand on Amazon.
If you go through self-publishing on Amazon or on BookBaby, your royalties are somewhere along the lines of 70%. Okay? You get a lot of money because they're dealing in bulk. So they can take 2 cents on each on 10 million books. If you go through a regular publisher and you get an advance, that's an advance against royalties, which means that the money they give you is taken up front off of any royalties you might get. So royalties will be few and far between unless it hits really big. And that's kind of how that works.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Thank you for calling. 800-348-2551. It's 800-348-2551. And Gary is in on it. Gary?
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. I just have a simple question. I'm a novice writer. I'm not too educated. And I recently had the opportunity to review a commentary on a religious topic. And I'm really fascinated with the conclusions of the author. And I just want to know, I guess my question is, what's the criteria, okay, that results in plagiarism? And how close do you need to be refused on that basis?
Yeah, so plagiarism is a tough topic for writers. You certainly never want to be in a position where somebody accuses you of that. So you never want to take word for word from somebody else's writing. You really never want to paraphrase somebody either. If you need to use material of somebody else's, always cite, give them the credit for it. So you can certainly do that.
I would say I'm not sure what your project is exactly. You found this thing, it looked good, and you want to write something kind of based on what excited you about that. And that's fine. If you're going to quote the original author, if it's a nonfiction article, you're going to quote the author, that's fine too. Use quotation marks and proper citations. The idea of citation is to let the reader know the original source of the material so they can look it up. And they can find it themselves. If it's an idea that they had that you're thinking, wow, this would make a great science fiction story, that's kind of open game.
Yeah.
I can take an idea from, I don't know, Thomas Aquinas and say, oh, I'm going to make a science fiction story out of that. And I don't have to quote him. If I want to pay him a homage, I'll put a little quote at the front, an epigram at the front. So that's a different story. Does that help?
That's excellent. I appreciate your time.
Sure.
Thank you very much for calling, Gary. 800-348-2551, the Writers Forum today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Email us to voxpop@wamc.org. Back to agents. First of all, where do you start to find one? And do agents have specialties? Are there nonfiction agents,
yeah,
science fiction agents? And how do you find the right one for your project?
There's used to be, and you still can find them by going to writing conferences, conventions of various kinds. There's a bunch of, for specific genres, there's romance conventions, science fiction, Western, just about anything you might want. And agents will go to those actually seeking people and they'll have pitch sessions. That's true for nonfiction as well. And you get to meet them and pitch your work and so on and so forth. And I think that's a really good way to meet agents. It's a more personal touch. You can also send out query letters based on lists you can find. There's a good site called agentquery.com. They give a lot of information about how to write a query letter, how to approach an agent, and they list just tons of agents as well as small presses, and give you contact information, what they're up to, what they're looking for.
And just like Barbara was saying about the romance editors who are very specific about what they're looking for, agents would do the same thing. They'll say, we're looking for nonfiction work around these topics, or we only represent science fiction and fantasy and thrillers, or we only do romance. So they will be very explicit about the kind of work they're looking for. And they will also, in many cases, have their response times on there as well. So that's often useful to have.
How important is the title? I imagine it can be everything in publishing. And the title probably is fluid. It can be changed. But for instance, I years ago bought a book, Theodorus Rex, about Teddy Roosevelt. And if that book had been named just Teddy Roosevelt, a biography, I never probably would have saw it. But Theodorus Rex.
That's great.
I love
that.
With a big picture of him on the cover. And, it attracted me to it. It's a great book, too. So the title is, does the author come up with the title, the publisher, the agent?
I have come up with my own titles. Yeah. And I'm pretty good with titles because I worked in advertising for a few years. I like your titles as well.
Yeah. I mean, generally, right, the writer does come up with the title. The interesting thing about writing is everything the writer has done is subject to change. Yeah. So the editor may decide that your title or may decide that your first chapter is no good.
You're right.
The publisher can get involved in that. So it can there can be a bunch of people. When you're talking about screenplays, it gets even worse.
Oh, yeah. Because Steve has told me the first thing, and we did this, we optioned a few screenplays. And when one of them, Steve said, get ready. The first thing they're going to want to do is change the title. I said, why would they do that? It's a great title. He said, well, they have to mark their territory.
Yeah.
And sure enough, next email we got, going to change this title.
Who do you send that to? The studios in Hollywood? Where do you send a screenplay to?
There's a couple of, boy, that's a world that's even more wild than publishing, if you believe it or not.
It depends.
Yeah.
There are agents who will look at screenplays. If you know producers, you can send them directly to producers. If you know showrunners, you can send them to showrunners. So a lot of it depends on who you know in the business.
The world, it very much operates on connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Let's talk to Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike?
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a kind of a combined comment and question and a warning. My father published, first of all, that woman who called earlier saying she hoped she didn't wait too long. My father published his memoir at 90.
Yay.
Excellent.
Self-published, and he has a pretty amazing story to tell. But again, it's got great reviews on Amazon, but he did it without his children getting involved, and he believes now that he kind of got ripped off by the major self-publishing house that he used.
Oh.
Speaking of royalties. So I kind of acted on his behalf, and we took it down. We they own the ISBN number. So anyway, I want to publish another version. What do you call it? The second publishing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I can get a new ISBN number, and you just have to amend it a little bit. But I'm just wondering. My other question is, he really wants it printed. He did both electronic and printed. So I would like to do a new printing. Do you have any recommendations? Just because we want to self-print it, three siblings to put some money together. And, you know, I would hawk it around to get it out there that way, but also, again, put it back up on Amazon.
Does he still own the rights to it, the copyright?
I believe so. How could he have lost those?
I don't know. It depends on who he went through. The one of the primary sources right now for self-publishing is CreateSpace, which is a division of Amazon.
How long ago was this?
It came out in 2014, so 3 years ago. And, I mean, I can tell you the name of the company, but maybe I shouldn't.
No, you probably shouldn't.
Thank you.
say the word Disney, okay? Because then you're just, it's over, it's over.
No. But, I mean, I believe they own the ISBN number. I know that much.
So it's going to be important to find some kind of contract, something your dad would have signed with this company.
Okay.
And that will lay out copyright, how long, rights, who can do what,
right.
and that document is really going to determine what you can then go ahead and do.
Right.
If you find out that
you may have to buy back the rights.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, depending
exactly.
on the contract.
But that's where you should start.
Yes, and get a lawyer to look it over as well. Am I allowed to say who I use?
Sure, why not?
It's Paul Rapp. He does the copyright.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, he's my guy.
He sits in your chair.
He loves it when I call him because he says, I always know when you call, it's going to be a weird question.
R-A-P-P?
Yes.
R-A-P-P, yep.
Okay. And if he does have the rights, he owns that, but, you know.
Yep.
Is CreateSpace, can you do both there, e-publishing and
absolutely.
Publishing?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. And they have a list of places that can assist you in creating a cover. Internal formatting, you know, they can direct you to people that do that professionally. I think, is my email on the website?
That I'm not sure. What is it?
It's my last name. It's chapitis@AOL.com. And if you want to email me, I also know some people that do covers.
Okay. Am I allowed to say my dad's book name or title?
Oh, why not?
Yeah.
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, it's called Cry If You Can, and his name's Leo Winokur Wynn.
I'll look it up.
Okay. It's a Holocaust memoir.
I'll look it up.
That's a good title.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Speaking of
Thank
titles,
you.
Yes.
800-348-2551. John, go ahead. John in the Pine Bush.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I think you might have answered my question previously. I was looking to, I have a friend who self-published a book, and he's I'm trying to help him to promote it and to be able to find a literary and you mentioned the website before. I could try looking there.
Yeah, the other thing I think is important to mention is with just like self-publishing has changed dramatically in the last decade, the need for an agent has also changed. There's a lot of things that you can do without an agent in terms of promotion. I mean, you talked about promotion. You can do a lot of the things that an agent would do. And so, you know, think about that. Answer the question, what do you really want the agent to do for you?
Yeah, because an agent will not sign on just to promote your book. What you're looking for, if you're looking for someone to promote, is you're looking for a publicist. They charge. Or you're going to have to, and this is one of the problems with self-pub, you have to do all your own promotion or hire a publicist. So you have to either get savvy about doing your own PR or you have to pay a publicist.
Yeah, because the agent makes money by taking your work and selling it to somebody else and then taking a percentage of that sale.
Right.
Right.
Well, I know the book that he's written is really, really good. Everybody that reads it really loves it. And he's sold a few thousand copies
Amazon.
That's good.
But, that's good.
It's part of a trilogy. So I'm hoping that to be able to get him in the hands of a large publisher to take out the rest.
Well, again, you go to agentquery.com, start looking up the agents that making your list of what kind of agents take that kind of book and let them know. He wrote this first one. It did well. We are interested in pursuing traditional publication for the second and third in the series. Yep.
Okay.
And do your query letter based on that.
Excellent. Thank you for your help.
Sure.
Thank you for calling, John. It's the Writers Forum, 800-348-2551. The email, voxpop@wamc. Again, the phone number, 800-348-2551. More calls after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products, and gifts. WaterwheelVillage.com. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting the opportunity to count common nighthawks flying over Albany as they continue on their over 6,000-mile southward migration. AlbanyPineBush.org. Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire. Corn Fest, with samples of Whitney's corn, homemade corn chowder, corn husking, corn eating contests, sack races, pickle patch competition, activities for children, August 20th, 1 to 5, WhitneysFarm.com. And Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com.
Barbara Chapitis and Steve Sawicki are our guests today on the Writers Forum at 800-348-2551. Back to getting an agent. Would a good agent not take any money up front, or do they want some? How do you spot a good one, and how do you spot a crook?
Yeah, so here's the thing about writing. The money should always flow in one direction, and that's towards the writer. So anytime anybody says to you, I will do this for, and that gives you offers an amount, walk away from that person. Agents should not charge you anything. A publisher should not charge you anything. An editor shouldn't charge you anything. If you may want to go out and have your book be line edited by somebody, in which case you would pay for that.
Right.
But in terms of sending your material out to get it published, there should be no money going from you to anybody.
Yeah. Traditional publishers and traditional agents do not charge. There are some people who offer services for a fee. Like I do, I edit people's novels if they ask me to, and I charge a fee because that's my time. But I don't, you know, seduce them and say, I'm going to get your book published. It's going to be the best.
Yeah.
All you have to do is pay me, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't do that.
So how does the money get made by the agent? Once you are published, they take part of the
publisher pays them. It comes out of the money that mm-hmm. is the overall right. sale of the book.
What should they take usually? 10, 15?
It's about 15%, yeah.
800-348-2551. Howard in Hillsdale. Go ahead, Howard.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And this is a nonfiction project. It's a culmination of running an innovation institute for 12 years. And I'm wondering if there's any reason to not self-publish. You're describing speed as a reason to maybe do it yourself. Very experienced at inventing things, shipping products, so agent, publicist, don't need help there, but editor probably need help. Is there any reason to not self-publish?
For you, probably not, especially if you're also, you know, out in the public world doing this sort of thing. Nonfiction, that's about the sort of thing you can also do speaking engagements for, is one of the best and most profitable areas for self-publishing. The reason some people and or many people want to try a traditional publisher is first to get the sort of imprimatur that, you know, I have been officially accepted by the institution of publishing, and second for the advance, quite frankly.
And when Random House publishes your book,
right.
they put your book in, you know, 12,000 bookstores across the country.
The distribution.
Yeah, the distribution. And that's something you're not going to be able to do by
yourself. And promotion and publicity. People who self-publish are doing all of that on their own. When I work with a traditional publisher, I don't make the cover. I don't have to worry about the font. I don't have to worry about the format. You know, I'm just the writer. That's all.
Yeah. You don't send out review copies to all the reviewers and all the various publications,
right.
TV stations.
So if you self-publish, you're doing all that on your own. People who are doing a lot of speaking engagements bring their books with them and sell them that way. And that's and they've done well with that sort of model. Make sense?
And that's one of the reasons I want to do it, because I have spoken all over the world about innovation. And right now the world's a mess. Innovation is one of the answers. And I'm partially doing this as a public service to offset a lot of the negative feedback that the public has about what's going on in the world.
Then go for it.
So, yeah. Thank you very much, Howard.
Self-publishing could really work.
Okay. Yep.
So when you mention like a Random House or somebody, can you publish it yourself and then perhaps get picked up by a larger publisher later if it works, or does it even matter?
No, it does happen. Publishers used to be very leery about self-published novels because they felt that a certain number of copies had already been sold that they weren't then going to be able to sell. But in the last couple of years, they've certainly changed that. And so, yes, it's definitely possible. And you can also shop a book that you've self-published once you've got some legs to it or some backing or some audience to it.
Because you retain the copyright. So,
thank you very much for calling. 800-348-2551. What about the direct approach? You've self-published and you take your book right to the bookseller. Anybody do that?
Yeah. Booksellers are fairly reluctant to put them on their shelves.
Yeah.
Some, I think, are beginning to have like a self-pub section, but they have limited space, and you know they're fighting for every buck they have these
days. Can you
days.
Crack into the Barnes and Noble?
No, probably not.
Yeah.
It's an accounting issue.
Yeah.
You know, the bookstores have accounts with all the major publishers. It's tracked. They can send books back. If just think about it. If 60 people walked into Barnes and Noble and said, "Here, I'll give you my book. Please put it on the shelf," and then don't give me any money to even sell it. That's 60 accounting processes
right.
they have to run on all those books.
And plus, aren't they still taxed on their material inventory?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because that's one of the things about self-pub and print-on-demand. They aren't taxed on that inventory because it's electronic.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's held electronically.
800-348-2551. Jim in Albany. Jim, go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
Good program. My question is about the title of a book being a very important part of the book, the leading element, as what Emerson said, and everything flows from that. So who has the right to give the title to the book? I can see why the publisher would want the right and often takes the right, but the writer also wants the right to decide the title. What have you heard about any classic cases of this disagreement between writer and publisher, and what's your views?
I haven't. I had one negotiation on one of my titles once. They wanted a slight change in it, and I said, "Yeah, that sounds okay." It worked for me. When you approach a publisher or an agent, you already have a title, so that's the
right.
title that sold them. in most
cases. How
about
the contract? What does the contract generally say about the title?
It names the title as part of the whole process, but please don't get me into contracts. They're like, you know, 25 pages long and speak some alternate universe language.
Yeah. Everything is negotiable between the writer and everybody else.
Yeah.
With the understand, though, that if the publisher really, truly thinks that your title is terrible and they want a new title, it may become a point where if you don't want to go in with that, that you may have to take your book and walk away from that publisher.
Right.
And that has happened with writers in the past.
Right. So you got to choose your battles.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you for calling. It's 800-348-2551. Joanna in South Hadley. Go ahead, Joanna.
Thanks so much for this program.
Sure.
It's wonderful. I'm a published author, and my book was published 7 years ago, Caring for Dying Loved Ones, a helpful guide for families and friends, through a very small press in Florence, Mass., named Levelers Press. Hmm. I was their second published author, and they now have over 40 titles in print. And I must say that process was so wonderful.
Yeah.
Steve Strymer, who founded Levelers, is just an absolutely wonderful designer, and I can't speak highly enough. It enabled me to retain the copyright. They have the rights to the design of the book because they designed it.
Mm.
I didn't pay for the book to be published. If I have the book published elsewhere, and I have, it's now in Mandarin Chinese. It was published by the Chinese government, and that was quite a process, but it's now in Chinese bookstores. So I was able to take it elsewhere. So I highly recommend small presses like Levelers Press. The other thing is I've been a panelist and been on the conference committee of the Wright Ingalls Annual Conference. It's in its 31st year. It will be at Mount Holyoke College in South Hadley, Mass., November 18th, 2017. It's a wonderful conference. It covers everything, fiction, nonfiction. There are agents there that will read book proposals.
Yep.
So may I just give a website so people can go there?
Yes, I would love to hear it.
Okay, it's WrightAngelsConference.com, and that is WrriteAngelsConference.com, all one word. And the preliminary schedule is already posted, and it only has about 130 slots, but it is a fabulous conference.
Thank you so much for that.
Mount Holyoke. And thank you both for sharing all of your wisdom and advice.
Sure. Thank you very much. 800-348-2551. Enrico in Pittsfield, go ahead. Hi, are you there? I guess not. 800-348-2551. Let's talk to Jason in Ellenville. Jason.
Hello.
Hi.
I wrote an autobiographical memoir, and I have a friend taking it to six at least publishers in London already, but I wanted to know your ideas for publishing and, like, could and how can I try to get an agent and the royalty split and the amount of the advance I might expect.
Those are big questions.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Those are the questions you should have at this point.
Yes. Yes, they are. Memoir is almost always has some autobiographical elements in it, so I would identify
it. Yes, it is totally true autobiographical.
Yeah, I would identify it just as a memoir. Autobiography means you're writing about your entire life rather than one piece of it. And again, I'm going to go back to, you know, earlier in the show, I talked about a place called agentquery.com that you can go to find agents that deal specifically with
I'm sorry. Let me write down that website.
Agentquery.com. Query is
so Q-U-E-R-Y.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. And I would go there. There's tons of information there that's going to guide you. And don't expect to just send out six or eight and get it published. I have... with some projects have sent out upwards of 50 before I got a hit. So.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a persistence game. If you believe in it, you'll go for it.
Well, I sold my first two screenplays. I wrote six of those in a play, and now I wrote this memoir.
Oh, great.
Great.
Thank you very
Selling
much.
Selling two screenplays is a good thing.
Thank you for calling. 800-348-2551. When it comes to autobiographies or memoirs, do you have to have, for lack of a better word, a different kind of life? And we had the Holocaust survivor earlier, or do you have to be a member of the SEALs that killed Osama bin Laden before a publisher? I mean, if you just grew up in middle-class America, went to college, had got married, had kids, you know, does something different or something big have to happen?
I don't think it has to be huge. I mean, these days publishers are tending to look for, you know, the dramatic story.
Yeah.
There are places that are looking for more personal journeys. A lot of it has to do with some, you know, really fundamental questions. How do you survive the tragic death of a spouse?
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with, I saw one recently, it was about a kid who had some developmental issues. I think some of it was autism, and they got him a chicken, and that made mm-hmm. great changes in him. So, you know, sometimes it is unusual, but there are ones that are there. I think about more the how we deal with being human.
Yeah.
You know, it's a journey of discovery. People want to know, how do I as a human deal with going from here to there? So that can be simple or it can be highly dramatic.
Yeah. And remember, Thoreau wrote about living in a cabin by a lake.
Yeah.
He did pretty well.
Yeah, he did.
800-348-2551. John and Saugerties. John.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Good.
I'm really good at starting things and not finishing. I'm sure I'm the only one. And also, I have to work for a living because my children like to eat and sleep inside. So
that's too bad. Got to do something about that.
Yeah, I'm trying. So I'm kind of toyed with the idea of ghostwriters, but I don't know much more than the term itself. So I'd like you to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so I've done that. Ghostwriting, the basic idea behind ghostwriting is you hire somebody to do the writing for you. You essentially are going to, it's a contract, so you don't have to worry too much about them going off the rails and changing the story you want to tell.
Okay, or stealing it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they won't steal it. I mean, the downside is it's going to cost you.
Mm-hmm.
And like anything else, the contract is going to be important in terms of time that you're going to give this individual to write the product. Also, rewrites should be in there because mm-hmm. you don't want to just say, I want you to write it and you have 3 months and then accept that as the finished product, because the person may not have understood things that you thought were critical. So you want to have the opportunity to have them go back in there and fix that.
Right. There's a kind of a middle way as well, and that's writing consultant or writing coach. And I've done this with people where I had a woman who had never, English wasn't her first language. She had never written a book. She didn't know how to type. And she had this book she was burning to tell. And we worked together. I would see her for a couple of hours once or twice a week. And we figured out how to lay it out. We figured out how much of it she wanted to write, how much she wanted me to edit, and so on and so forth. And over time, the project was completed. And it actually was a wonderful experience for both of us. So that's another option.
But also, you talked about time and not feeling like not having time. Take a good look at your schedule and see if there's anywhere where you could give something up that you're currently doing and use that time for writing. Writing does take time. I'm notorious for not finishing things. having said that, I have finished a lot of things. So, time and energy are two things that every writer needs. And I think people don't understand how much time and how much energy writing actually takes.
Right.
So I hate to, you know, quit.
Well, no,
quit the job. Get rid of the kids.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan to me.
I got you on speaker. I've gone through college. I've done postgraduate work, so I've done a tremendous amount of writing. I wish I could put that all together. So I understand how long it takes to write, write a good quality piece. I'm not going to this blind, but
yeah.
I was just curious about how that would work.
Yeah, ghostwriter, you actually are going to be spending time with the ghostwriter as well. There will be hours involved in that because they have to spend time with you to get to know how you want this project written.
And think about what the most important thing is for you. Is the most important thing having the product, or is the most important thing, you know, how important is the experience of getting from now to the product to you. And if that experience is not that meaningful, then, yeah, the ghostwriter may be the solution.
Oh, yeah.
He just mentioned he's done a lot of academic writing, but academic writing can be awfully dry, awfully clinical. How do you take that background and switch it into something that people want to read and publishers will get by page two before they say yawn?
That's right. I'm just thinking of my one of my oral exam, one of my written exams for my doctorate was had an amoeba kind of that wore a pink hat moving through it.
Okay. Like, what was your subject?
chaos theory and creativity.
Okay.
Yeah. And the amoeba seemed appropriate at the time, and I did graduate with high honors and pass with high honors. So, but yeah, academic writing can be—it's a whole different rhythm. It's a different pacing, et cetera, et cetera. Depending on what kind of academic writing you're doing, there are some areas that are more interesting than others.
See, and I would say it depends more on the writer. Many writers can write in more than one style.
Yeah.
And you can write in an academic style. You can then write in a more chatty kind of style. So it really understanding who your audience is going to be and being able to adapt your content to that audience.
We are just about
out. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was a quick hour.
Yeah.
It really was.
I'd like to thank everyone who called in and apologize to those we left on the line. And thanks to our guests, Barbara Chapaitis and Steve Sawicki, for joining us today.
Hey, go buy my books. Look me up on Amazon.
Support for WAMC and Vox Pop comes from Culligan Water of the Northeast for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work, culligannortheast.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Spade Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls, more than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole, move it forward. DLSPECHT.com. Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic natural products, no cage drying. Facebook and 8666-WASH-WAG. Thanks again today for joining us on Vox Pop. Our engineer, Zach Malloy, Colleen O'Connell answered the phones. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Brian Shields. Tomorrow in for Ray Graff as well. It's all about hiking and biking. Stay tuned now for a news update.